T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
WTIC, thanks so much for tuning in, being part of this program, where we try to address what's wrong, what's obvious, what's a lie, what needs to be fixed, all that kind of stuff. Joining us now, former State Senator Joe Markley, who is a voice of reason and sanity in an otherwise dark world. Hello there, Joe.
Howdy, Todd. Been enjoying the show. Good to hear my friend Red Janky a few minutes ago.
Yes.
And happy to go in whatever direction you want. But I know that one of the things that I've had on my mind is this bizarre behavior by Lamont telling us yesterday that he couldn't do anything about these contracts, and then coming out today and saying, I really hope that we can make a deal. This seems to be like the very worst way to make a deal I ever heard of, by announcing...
You mean to announce his own weakness at the entrance to the negotiation?
And, you know, here's a governor that has the power to shut down our churches, right?
Yes.
Tell everybody what they can do, shut businesses down, all kinds of decisions which seem essentially arbitrary. But all of a sudden, one thing he can't deal with is contracts for the employees that work for the state of which he is governor. He can tell everybody else that they can't even open their doors, and all their employees have to go sit home. But somehow he declares himself powerless when it comes to state employees. I think it's.
I think it's a
ridiculous position.
You know, Joe, there's a statement that's often made with regard to state government and electoral politics, and that is that no legislature can tie the hands of a future legislature, and presumably the same is true of the governor. The idea being, you can pass anything you want now, but the next legislative session comes along and a whole new body comes in, or a partially new body, and they can vote whatever they want. But this union thing, it seems to me, part of what makes it such a devious, destructive construct is that it builds an external entity with rules that permanently tie the hands of everybody involved.
Yes. First of all, if you accept that the hands are tied, and I think one of the things about it is, if you had the right person as governor, they'd say, I refuse to acknowledge that my hands are tied. If that means we're going to end up in court, so be it. But I'm going to assume that I have the power to make changes in these contracts. And the second thing is, if this is the way that we're doing business, then we're doing the business the wrong way. We simply got to change the rules so we don't live in a world in which an outgoing governor like Dan Malloy can try to tie up a contract so that he was expecting a Republican to come in, so the Republican that came in would have been unable to do anything about it.
All right, let's walk this through a little bit, though, Joe. Let's say Ned Lamont was a noble character who wanted to solve the problems of the state instead of a cookie-cutter politician who wants to find a way to trick everybody into voting for him and his party again. What would he do right now if he wasn't going to worry about his own future, but was going to worry about the future of the state and the best interests of the people? How does he tackle this thing?
I think you say by executive order. He's had no hesitation about issuing executive orders. By executive order, the wage increase is suspended. And let them howl and let them take you to court. But let's find out if he has. Let's find out if he has the power. I think if I were governor, I certainly would tackle it that way, even if I didn't have a legislature that was going to back me up.
Is that a glorious proposition? The idea of having somebody willing to fight for what's right instead of just protecting the corrupt election rigging scheme.
And if you have the power to do all these other things, why don't you believe you have the power to do something that only involves the functioning of state government? It's an amazing thing to say. I can tell private citizens what to do. I can tell private businesses what to do. I can tell churches what to do. But mm-hmm. I am powerless to do anything about state government.
Yeah, but you're ignoring the political realities. And ultimately, it comes down to political realities. Even Republicans are afraid to stand up and say these unions need to be stopped. We've got to protect people from killer cops. And that's impossible with police unions having the power that they have. We've got to protect taxpayers in the state. There should not be any tax increases while we have unions artificially driving up the cost and refusing to give back on tax hikes. Why isn't anybody in the public square demanding that right away we get rid of unions moving forward, that they just not be part of the equation? Whatever we can keep in place for people's benefits, we keep in place. But otherwise, we shut it all off
I wouldn't extend it as far as private unions. Again, private unions are private organizations. If people want to.
No, I'm just talking about about the way the government runs itself.
But public sector unions, which did not exist until 1962, that Franklin Roosevelt were opposed to, that's something that we really never should have adopted. And it would be a radical position to say that we're going to do away with them. But it's getting to the point where that's what people are going to be driven to. And I feel that at a certain point, even.
But it seems to me the radical position is that they exist and that the people get robbed and that the state is bankrupt and that every governor comes in and just starts raising taxes because he has no choice. But that no choice is only because he refuses to confront the unions and to say this is a disaster for the state. It's not affordable. We're going to negotiate our way out of it as best we can right now and be done with these things. And that's, to me, that's just obvious. That's what we would do if there weren't political realities. But political realities win out when it comes to George Floyd, dead on the street. The Democrats are running around saying, let's have a commission. Let's have a Citizens Oversight Board. They're talking all this nonsense. It's non-responsive. They have so little respect for voters. I just find it appalling, Joe.
Well, there's going to be, what they're saying is, let's have a special session. And this is going to be the Sandy Hook situation all over again. Now we have a disaster, and we can use that disaster to push through a lot of unrelated issues that we can wrap in the cloak of addressing this tragedy. And what scares me, of course, Todd, as always, I know what the Democrats are going to do. What scares me is that the Republicans may be gulled into going along with it.
Whoa, now you're scaring me. Joe Markley, hold on one sec. We'll finish up with Joe. We'll take some phone calls. 860-522-9842. Don't forget, we're going to do the rant line in about 20 minutes. 860-751-4698. Wow. So you just said a mouthful there, Joe Markley. Talk more about that.
Well, the Democrats have been very upfront about the fact that now the special session is going to be about criminal justice reform. And I believe that the legislative caucuses will turn over the leadership to the urban legislators, who are the most radical people on these issues. That's what they're going to do. I'm not saying I think it's a bad thing, but that's not what I'm here to condemn. The question in my mind is, does the Republican Party say, go ahead and craft your radical agenda, because and then we'll look at it and decide that we can't support it? Or does the Republican Party say, we want to be part of the conversation and make themselves complicit in whatever likely outrageous, more or less outrageous things are passed in response to this tragedy. But we don't have the nerve to stand up and say what you're doing is a mistake. That's essentially what Republican leadership did after Sandy Hook. Rather than say, you want to put together a package of meaningless, worthless new gun legislation, go right ahead. We're going to vote against it. But they didn't want to vote against it. They wanted to vote for something. So they got in the room, right. They negotiated and negotiated. They convinced themselves they had a great deal. And the leadership, not the majority of the Republican legislators, but the leadership went for it. It's going to be even tougher to keep people from folding on this issue and supporting bad things. I'm not saying that they shouldn't address the issue. I'm saying that they shouldn't use it as an excuse for radical things like what they're talking about now. Defunding the police. My goodness. I almost feel like someone sat in the back room and said, hey, guys, what's the craziest idea we can come up with? Defund the police. Okay, let's see if we can sell that. And the mood in the country is so – there's so little backbone to resisting this that people are just rolling over and supporting it. The Republican.
We're talking to Joe Markley, former state senator. So Joe, let me present that idea in a different light and see what you think of it. Because I like to turn these things around and see if there's advantage for people who believe in America over those who hate it and want to tear it apart. But it seems to me one way we could interpret the defund the police argument is that what they're really saying is this corrupt system held in place and protected. The murderers are protected by police unions. You can't get rid of the bad cops. That's what the Minneapolis mayor said this week. That's what Spike Lee said last night. If we want change, we've got to get rid of the police unions. And what they're saying, instead of we don't want to have police, maybe what they mean is that this system is so corrupt, the only way to build a police force with a different culture, because this culture is so powerful and has so fully permeated all the mechanisms of a state and municipal government, that what we have to do is close the police departments that we have now and start new ones with new values and new systems and without the corrupt unions. What do you think about that? What's wrong with that?
Essentially what they did in Camden, New Jersey.
Yes.
They didn't do away with the police, but they did away with their existing police department. I think they moved it to the county level. So they were able to get out of their contracts with all their existing policemen and then hire back the ones that they wanted.
Yes.
That's a radical solution. I don't think it's what's needed in certainly in the overwhelming majority of places in the state of Connecticut. One thing you need, I could certainly support doing away with public sector unions, but I also could work with unions that were reasonable. Once upon a time, a union was like a guild. It enforced the qualities and the qualifications of its own members. It was tougher on the people that belonged to it than the people on the outside were. And I think that that the vast majority of policemen and policewomen would support that. They're the ones.
What happened? How did that get changed, Joe? What changed?
What changed is that the union ended up making its role not improving the quality of its own membership, but defending every single one of its members. And that's happened to unions across the board, not just the police, but the teachers, and not just in the public sector, but in the private sector as well.
Yeah, but how did that happen? What was the trigger? There had to be some rule change or some new deal that got made that allowed that structurally. Because structurally, the unions always say, that's what we have to do. We are charged with defending our members, regardless of how badly you think they've behaved.
You know, if I were to speculate on why it changed, Todd, I'd say it changed when the union leaders and the union office staff ceased to be actual people who were out doing the job and became a professional class of bureaucrats themselves.
Okay.
And they are a very professional class. Union stewards now get their state pay, but they don't have to do any work anymore. Once upon a time, a union was something that existed in addition to whatever else you were doing. Now the union is its own bureaucracy, and I think it's separated from the actual workers and interested in preserving itself and the service it provides, it sees its service as being defending everyone and not giving an inch.
Isn't this the disease of big government, though, that everything has been expanded and infused with unnecessary expense and unnecessary political power in order to aggrandize those who occupy those seats? So the purpose of government now is about the people who have power within it and protecting that power, not about doing the people's business.
Big everything is bad, in my opinion, Todd. Big government,
agreed.
Big unions, big multinational corporations, they all work against the individual.
Agreed. Yes, they are anti-democratic and they are bad. But at least big companies make big money and create big jobs. And there's nothing else in society that does that. Everything else is a taker.
And if they perform badly enough, they get defunded by the consumers and cease to exist.
They sure do.
It happens to the unions and the government.
Yes, we see these big shifts going on in which companies are the dominant ones as industries change and power moves around. Joe Markley, thank you, sir. Great to have you here every week. Former state senator, all-around smart guy, and a guy who believes in the American system of government, which is something I favor right there. That's great. I just feel so wonderful that we get to share voices like that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.